Thank you all for joining us today. This is the Q&A follow-up session for Turning Data into Information, and Mark Edgar, our presenter for the session, is here on the line with us today. And all of you are welcome to ask any questions of Mark that you would like to ask, and hopefully he'll be able to answer those, and if he can't, he'll point you to some resources, or we'll follow up with you shortly after the call. So at this time, I'd like to open it up to anyone who has a particular question. Just unmute your line and ask away. If someone else is trying to ask a question, we'll just follow up after the first person asks. So go ahead.
This is Mark. I'll ask a question of the group. I wonder if folks went and looked at the rest of that little web video that we showed, and we know it was a little out of sync in the webinar probably, but I'm always interested in what people thought of that. I use it a lot in different classes.
Mark, this is Tricia from Southern Seven. I just actually did the webinar, and I plan to. I thought that was real interesting, his way of presenting that. So I do plan to, but I haven't yet.
Well, I would really suggest that folks take a few minutes. It's maybe 15 minutes worth of video, but he makes some really interesting points, and it's a fascinating the way they've animated the data. But he makes some really interesting points about, first of all, communicating data, but then also being wary of aggregation, hiding disparities, or hiding variance is probably the better way to put it. But when I'm thinking about health statistics, I'm often thinking of disparities. So he goes on at some length, and there's a lot of other wonderful videos in that Gapminder series. So if you Google Gapminder, you'll find a number of different short videos where they animate data, public health data, in various ways.
I see the same thing with the CDC on the obesity. When the states color in, when you show that, that's so impressive to people to see that. I don't know if you know the one I'm talking about on the obesity rates through the...
Yeah, I do use that. In fact, I use that in one class where I show that, I go back a number of years and I show how they started with a certain range of colors, and then eventually they had to expand the range of colors because they needed to include, more and more variants.
Yeah, that's very interesting. People really take note of that.
Yeah.
Who has a question for Mark?
I had more of a comment than a question. This is Jack from Lake. I'd read the visual display of data some time ago. I haven't pulled it off my bookshelf for a while, but I use graphic display of data a lot. I've always preferred that over tables and things like that. And some of the pointers or some of the ideas that you gave, I try to keep things simple, and I guess I'm not always sure why I was doing it that way, but you gave me some rationalization for trying to have things cleaned up. And I've never liked the 3D data. I try to minimize the pie charts, although I, based on what you said, I probably still use too many categories. But it was just helpful, for me, because I'm a pretty heavy graphics user of data, and so to be reminded or be given some pointers on what's most effective was very helpful.
Well, thank you for that, Jack. And I do think that book has affected my thinking about how to try and communicate data or try to communicate information more than just about anything. And that really is his message, isn't it? Keep it clean. Keep it simple. You have a certain message, a certain amount of information or type of information that you want to communicate. And anything that isn't really communicating that information or that data ought to be dispensed with, probably. And I'm the same way. You know, I used to, I remember when I just loved those 3D bar charts and pie graphs. And turning, here's an example that I didn't use in the presentation, I don't think. The pie charts that will tilt and they look really nice.
Oh, right.
But the truth is that you're really, the more that you tilt that that pie chart, the more you're actually kind of visually causing the viewer problems. Because as you tilt it away, I mean, the clarity of the pie chart is, you know, the relationship of the part to the whole. And when you tilt that away, it actually kind of distorts that a little bit. So I would highly recommend folks, you know, this is a book that's probably in lots of libraries. It's a beautifully done book. Then that's the Edward Tufte book. So I would highly recommend it to folks.
The other thing, I think the default fonts on a lot of graphics is too large. I mean, usually if you make it smaller, it expands the visual part. That's the other thing I do. I think people can usually read the numbers and things pretty clearly at less than an 18 or 24 font.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. I spend a lot of time messing with fonts on both axes and usually try to use a sans serif font. I think it's a little more clear for folks, and particularly for people who have any type of visual disability. Mm-hmm. So those are really good points.
Thank you, Jack. Anyone else? Now's your time. You have 20 minutes with Mark. And I just want to make sure that you feel completely comfortable asking your question. No, you don't have to state your name or who's calling. But there's no stupid questions, and
that's right. And just comments too. If you have comments or, you know, ways we could make this better or things that you liked or didn't like, we'd be happy to hear those as well.
Mark, I guess I do have a question. I guess at the national level, I believe it's through Office of Women's Health, there's some data that you can access, and they use what's called cold to hot or hot to cold. You can make a map of your area, and like the higher numbers, I think, go darker with hot to cold or cold to hot. Have you heard that concept before?
You know, I don't know that I've heard the cold to hot or hot to cold. Are they suggesting there that the hot spots are areas where the health issue is a greater issue?
That's correct.
That's interesting. I haven't heard that exact terminology, so these are GIS maps or?
Now, I don't know about that, but I mean, you can actually take your area and look up the disease, the frequency, the morbidity, mortality, and it actually shows you dark to cold or lighter color to darker color where your incidences are. I just wondered if you knew of that.
I've done other GIS work, and this is an area that I think is going to, well, already is kind of revolutionizing public health. And, you know, we go back all the way to the famous John Snow and the Broad Street Pump. The first example of mapping health data, and how that it is a really good example of how information leaps out at people because of a graphical display. And we didn't talk much about it in this presentation, but you know, imagine if you had hundreds of addresses in a table, and the addresses were high lead levels for children. Just looking at a table of addresses will give you some information. But looking at a point map or a map where all of those points are articulated, that communicates the information from the data immediately. And I think that's the power of what you're talking about there, and the power of GIS in general. And and you can do more and more of that. If you go to, I think it's the American, Census Bureau site, but I think it's American Fact Finder. There are some places there where you can map data kind of online and on the fly, and that's a great way to communicate information to people. The other point that I would make about that is the similar to the discussion about Dr. Rosling's video is the way in which variation or variance can be masked by aggregate numbers. And let me tell you what I mean by that. Let's say that you've got a way to map, let's say you're looking at the whole state and you're mapping, maternal mortality by county. And so each county gets coded by a particular color. So you have an aggregation level at the county level. You lose the variance within that county. Now, it may be that the data is not available, and we all fall prey to the lack of data availability. But if the data is available, you could imagine that within that county, there might be pockets where higher maternal mortality or higher lead levels. And so one of the things that I try to do myself and I try to suggest to other people is always think about disaggregating. Now, you at some point you run into the problem of small numbers, or what some people have called the tyranny of small, and you get, you lose precision. But always breaking things apart about as far as you can go and having a look at the data in that form, and then maybe aggregating back up. But you can imagine, and Dr. Rosling shows this in a very interesting way later on in that video. He shows it's a very poor country within Africa. I don't remember which one it was, Uganda or somewhere. And it shows it, and where it shows up, I think they're looking at maternal mortality, and it shows it where it shows up within Africa. But then he breaks it apart into quintiles, and you see that the highest quintile is up near, the best numbers, and the lowest quintile is at the very worst. And it immediately communicates to people that there's wide variance that can be masked by aggregate data.
Mark, so dealing with some of the common data that we have available in Illinois for iPlan, what types of things or caution do you have for us so that we don't make some of those same mistakes with the aggregate data?
Well, if you're dealing with county-level data, now some counties will have some community-level data. There are a few communities that are large enough within the iPlan system that they have some specific data. So if you have that within your county, I think you look at that carefully. But the other thing is to always be aware, when we talked about the tyranny of small numbers here, to always be aware of those confidence intervals that are available, at least for some of the data in the iPlan system. And just real quickly, the confidence interval, just basically when we do surveys, when we do estimates, we come up with a point estimate. So let's say that we've got an estimate for the number of smokers, current smokers in a county. We know that that's not, we haven't surveyed everyone, so we know that that's a point estimate that has a certain amount of error around it. And the error is all tied up in the number of people that were surveyed and things of that nature. And so for many of these data points, there's a confidence interval around that point estimate. And basically it's saying, here's what we think is the best point estimate, and it could be as high as X, and it might be as low as Z. And so the idea is to think of that as a point estimate with some error around the estimate, and then to have a good understanding of that it could be anywhere within that range. And then you can begin to make comparisons. And this is what, you know, gets into the idea of statistical significance, that if you're comparing to other counties or to the state or to the nation, if those confidence intervals overlap, then you can't really say that they're statistically significantly different. So that's one of the things. And we have a real advantage here, I think, in Illinois, that we have that county-level data.
Thank you. Other questions?
I guess the other big point for me, as I'm kind of flipping through here again, is this idea of the level of measurement. And if you, sometimes you don't have any control over that. The data is already measured or collected. But the idea of thinking about that level of measurement and trying to measure at the highest level, the interval and ratio levels, as we tried to say in the presentation, you can always go backwards. Or kind of down the scale of measurement, categorize things. But if you don't have it measured initially, if you haven't collected the data at the interval or ratio level, you can't go up.
Still have about 9 or 10 minutes left if anyone has a question. Comment? Well, if there are no further questions or comments, we can certainly end the call. I would like to hear, did folks find this session useful? Is there additional information that you need for a follow-up session? That would be very helpful for us to understand if anyone would care to share.
Mark, I thought the session was very, very helpful. Matter of fact, I had a graph going both vertically and horizontally, and I was asking others here which looks better. And it's kind of funny because I think they also picked the horizontal one.
Oh, yeah.
So that's interesting that you felt that, or on the slides anyway, it said that was the better way to do it.
Yeah, well, it's really just a perceptual thing. Humans are much better at looking at distance on a horizontal basis. Think of this. It's much easier for somebody to say, and we're talking about different orders of magnitude here, but it's much easier for somebody to say, well, that looks like it's 30 feet going across the ground. You know, that looks like it's 30 feet away or 100 yards away. When you try and estimate height, it's much more difficult. People are just much better, and that's, you know, really goes to our evolutionary past. You know, we move around horizontally on the ground. It's only been in the last couple hundred years that we started moving around on the vertical axis very much. So it's really purely a kind of a perceptual thing. Now, other, you know, people have personal preferences as well, but I think what I do is, every time I have a bar graph, I turn it both ways and have a look at it. The other thing that is a real advantage is that it makes labeling the bars much easier, and makes reading the labels on the bars much easier. So, you know, you don't have to tilt the labels at the bottom on the x-axis, or you don't have to turn your head to look at them. So, yeah, it's something that I've started to do on a very consistent basis. But people have personal preferences as well.
Thank you for your information. That was very helpful.
No, thank you.
Any other comments on the utility of the session or follow-up needs? Okay, well then thank you very much, and